This is the Monocle Arts Review with me, Andrew Muller. Today we're talking music, and joining me once again is journalist for Pitchfork, Guardian, NPR and Uncut, among others, Laura Snapes, who will be talking about album releases out now or now about. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me again.
Your first choice today, the latest by His Golden Messenger. Before we get to the track, could you introduce any uninitiated listening to His Golden Messenger?
Yes, His Golden Messenger is one of those things that's sort of a band, but really it's just one guy. He's called Mike Taylor, and he's based in Durham in North Carolina, though he's originally from California. He's had a pretty long music career. In the 90s, he was in this hardcore band called Ex Ignota. Didn't really do very much. And then in the early aughts, he was in like a early kind of proto-Americana act called The Court and Spark, who also didn't do very much. But the His Golden Messenger project started around 2009, 2010, and it started with these really kind of lo-fi records that he would record, you know, by cover of night as his newborn kid slept. But then since then, they've become kind of more full-fledged and band-like with very exciting people on them. You know, he's made a lot of the community that he has around him. There's people like Phil Cook and Brad Cook, who are in the band Megaphone, who are on this record, and Justin Vernon from Bon Iver is on it somewhere, and songwriters like Tift Merritt and stuff pop up too.
It is His Golden Messenger with the double S, which is an affectation I find unaccountably annoying. I'm not sure why. I think it just looks wrong. It's the sub-editor in me that wants to delete one of the S's. I haven't heard the new album. I've heard bits of His Golden Messenger before. I've always found it a bit, I don't know, worthy.
I guess maybe you might think. I mean, it depends what kind of thing you're into. It's very much catnip to me. I love that kind of, you know, golden, bristling Americana. I like a really wry kind of drawling voice. He does, you know, he's singing about trying to be a good family man, and obviously that's not really something that I particularly relate to, but I think he sings about it with kind of this self-laceration, especially on this record, that I think is really appealing. And you know, on this album there's you know, there's kind of the Americana stuff like I was saying, but then there's also you hear his other kind of favorite things come in, like on the song like A Mirror Loves a Hammer. It's a lot more of this kind of like weird swampy dub thing, and I think, you know, it shows you the directions that he could go in future.
Okay, well, maybe that's why it's just he's always vaguely annoyed me, because everything you describe, the kind of wry Americana and self-lacerating lyrics, sounds exactly like the sort of thing I would imagine I would like. And yet it hasn't quite happened with His Golden Messenger. Let's see if this changes anything. This is from the new album Heart Like a Levee, and it's As the Crow Flies. As the Crow Flies by His Golden Messenger from the new album Heart Like a Levee, the first choice by this week's guest music reviewer, Laura Snapes. It sounds too much like the Grateful Dead. It's still not happening.
He is a massive Grateful Dead fan. I will say that's probably the breeziest, most euphoric bit on the whole album. You know, there are much thornier parts on it than that. But yeah, you know, it is kind of feel good music in a way. Like, he likes to talk about how he makes kind of minor chord lyrics, but he likes to have like a major chord MO to kind of, you know, tie the two things together all the time. And I can completely see how you wouldn't like it as well. It's like with, you know, I think he's probably part of the community that kind of gospel guy Matthew E. White is part of. And I remember I was really, really into that record. And then I played it to my dad thinking he would like it. And he's like, it just sounds like Jack Johnson. And I was like, oh no, it does, doesn't it? So it's very close to the mark of being like too cozy probably. But I'm a huge fan. That's my joint favourite record of the year, so I would really recommend people listen to it.
That is a great way to deflate somebody's love for a work of art with just one line, isn't
your
it?
Your dad.
Yeah, exactly.
It, well,
it sounds like Jack Johnson. Ouch. We will stay on an Americana theme for your next selection. This comes from not very so very far away from where I grew up, i.e. the Blue Mountains just outside of Sydney, which is, for anybody who hasn't been, it's glorious. God's own country. You should totally visit. It's Julia Jacklin. Aside from coming from the Blue Mountains, what do we know about her?
Not a vast amount. She's kind of a brand new artist. This is her debut album. I think she put out her debut single probably 6 months ago or something like that. Did a few festivals over the summer, and just going by what I saw at End of the Road and a couple of others, it seemed like she was going to be quite popular. She's, you know, you can very much triangulate where she's coming from. You know, there's a bit of like Gillian Welch in there in the mood of it, a bit of Courtney Barnett, her fellow countrywoman, in the lyrics, and then a bit like Sharon Van Etten as well. It's kind of, again, like wry Americana, but she's got these very kind of like deadpan lyrics that I really like, and I think she just kind of has this excellent way with a melody as well, I think.
Okay, well, let's try this. This is from her debut album, the title of which I like very much. It's Don't Let the Kids Win, and this is Lead Light.
So I ran with dreams to reach the skyline, set up that incline. I ran towards blue, and I didn't know that this sky is not only wider, oh, but clear when I'm standing next to you.
That is Lead Light by Julia Jacklin from her new album Don't Let the Kids Win on Transgressive, the second choice of today's guest music review at Laura Snapes. Perhaps unsurprisingly, I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that representative of the album as a whole?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that bit, as you can hear, is like maybe a more of a downbeat kind of waltzing kind of song. And there are heavier moments on there as well. But yeah, I mean, I think she's kind of a startling talent, really. I've reviewed the record for the next issue of Uncut, and it's very consistent. She's a brilliant lyricist. There's a line somewhere on that song where she talks about, not only was the grass not greener, I learned that life is easier when you embrace the rain. And there's kind of a pessimism running throughout it that I find really appealing.
That was lovely. Julia Jacklin from Don't Let the Kids Win. The song is called Lead Light, out on Transgressive. We should finish finally with, well, it's an audacious choice, because this is a reissue of a record that I'm actually old enough to remember the first time. I'm trying not to take that personally. It is Oasis's Be Here Now. It was released, God, it is 20 years ago, isn't it?
Nearly, 1997.
Yeah, okay, nearly 20 years ago. And it is being reissued. It's one of those 19th anniversary reissues that are all the rage, presumably. It's the hubris and nemesis fable of Britpop, isn't it? It's the empire declining. It's the where it all went wrong. Or at least that was the orthodoxy that I sort of grew up with, and indeed at the time I think contributed to. Is that how it seems to somebody coming to it from a subsequent generation?
Yeah, I mean, I do remember when it came out, when I was really little, What's a Story, Morning Glory was my favourite album until I discovered pop music. And I remember when my dad bought Be Here Now and put it on in the car. And it, you know, my dad does not have a wildly kind of discriminating music taste, but even he, after a few listens, was like, no, this is clearly terrible. We're not going to have this on anymore. I should say, I'm not coming here to recommend Be Here Now, but I was reviewing the reissue.
You're doing a heck of a job for your dad, though. We should get him in one week, maybe.
It was really, really fascinating. Like, the experience of listening to the reissue, 3 hours of it, like, with the original album is 70 minutes long, and then you get the Mystique demos, which are surprisingly fleshed out, but they do kind of show that these were not brilliant songs that were killed by studio trickery. They were mediocre songs that became mediocre but louder. And then at the end of that, you get all sorts of like live dross and demos and stuff that even I had heard before. And believe me, I'm not digging into the Oasis bunker that often. The reissue is kind of like the perfect expression, really, of Be Here Now as an album, in that it's bloated, it's unnecessary, there's no reason for it to exist. Noel Gallagher even said in like a press release around the album coming out, yeah, somebody had the idea that we should go back and we should remaster everything, but I did one song and I couldn't really be asked anymore. And it's just like, why is this album being reissued? I find this Oasis reissue campaign really interesting, just to think, well, are they going to do all the ones that come after this? Because they've already done the first two, the good ones, the only good ones. You know, how far do they go with it?
I mean, that's the question I've ended up asking about every Oasis album from this album on the first time, which is, I like most of the first album and about half of the second one, mm-hmm. which I realise is the entirely critically orthodox view of those Oasis records. Be Here Now is largely dreadful, and every album they've released since, I've just thought, who is buying this? Because it does presuppose that there's people going home who own the first two Oasis records and the subsequent ones, and given the choice, are choosing to listen to later Oasis. Who is making that decision?
God knows. I mean, you know, I'm speaking as somebody who used to work at NME when it was bought and paid for, you know, when the magazine's lifeblood was putting these two guys on the cover. Clearly, they do still have like a massive fandom, because as soon as either of them was on the cover of the magazine, it sold so much more than the rest of the time.
I can remember a similar phenomenon at Melody Maker in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. They were absolute bankers, even when we didn't have an interview and just some vague excuse for running their pictures on the cover.
Yeah, and you know, that's why this album is one of the greatest critical climb downs of all time, because it's got those horrendous early like original reviews where everybody is so effusive about it. I think Charles Charmory has even moved to lapse into patois.
Oh dear.
I think he says something like, Dem confess up de area about it or something like that, something awful. But it's because they, because if you didn't say the nice things about them, Croatia were not going to let you anywhere near them ever again.
It wasn't as cut and dried as that, though. I don't think it was even that mercenary. It was just some sort of strange collective hysteria. There was just this insistence that it must be great. And Croatia, in fairness to them at the time, played an absolute blinder by erecting these ludicrous security measures to anybody who wanted to hear it in advance of release, therefore creating the impression of something fantastical and magical and being borne down a mountain on stone tablets.
But I think that all backfired, because I was reading the Croatian record story and they were doing it because they knew that it wasn't very good and they were really trying to limit access to it. But it just backfired massively, and then you get TV cameras at HMV at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Well, we've given it the big sell. which track have you chosen?
I'm not really sure. It's going to be a surprise, I think. Stand by.
That was, of course, Stand By Me. It might as well have been almost anything else off that record. I can vividly remember hearing the tape I was sent the first time and thinking there was something wrong with my headphones.
When I was reviewing these reissues the other day, this sounds like terrible music journalist hyperbole, and I promise I've never said it otherwise. I had such bad earache from listening to it. The mastering is atrocious. I think apparently there's like up to 50 tracks of guitar on certain songs, coupled with a 36-piece orchestra, double tracked. So I can't even add up how many instruments that is. I will say I think Stand By Me is one of the highlights, and I weirdly have a soft spot for all 8 minutes of Do You Know What I Mean? Yeah, yeah. But other than that, that's about it.
Did you find any way into it at all, sort of revisiting the whole thing, even kind of admiring it as some ludicrous gauche symbol of hubris, much as you can find something to, I don't know, grudgingly admire in Ceausescu's palace in Bucharest or something?
Well, it was interesting because I was listening to it for the review purposes just around the same time that I saw Supersonic, which is the documentary which is out now, I think, which is just about their first two albums. So you have the contrast of this like lightning in a bottle brilliance that they can't control, and suddenly this huge, enormous drop off. And yeah, I suppose, you know, even before the record was released, like 2 months before it was released, Noel Gallagher was saying, it's not that interesting, it's just Oasis, some guitars, there's no innovation here whatsoever. So I suppose I kind of appreciate the way they played the situation they were in, but I don't think that there was anything particularly crafty at work there. I think they were just lazy and complacent and off their faces on coke.
and that right there should have been the title of the accompanying film. Be Here Now by Oasis, if you absolutely insist, has just been re-released by Big Brother Recordings. That brings us to the end of this week's show. Thank you to Laura Snapes. You have been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Andrew Muller. The producer was Holly Fisher. The show was researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. At the same time tomorrow, join us for our TV review with Alice Vincent. For now, goodbye from me, and thanks for listening.